Well, good morning, everybody. Good to see you. My name's Jerry. I'm the third teacher. You'll meet Linda later. Well, I guess you met us all now. I'm going to be talking this morning about Karuna, the second of the four Brahma-Viharas. Karuna is meaning compassion. But before I jump in totally, I want to say that all of these Brahma-Viharas are one of the wings. They're the wings that we often look at our meditation, our mindfulness practice, our sitting and meditation practice. There are two wings to this practice. There is the wisdom component, and there's the compassion component. But when they say compassion and component, I usually include all the Brahma-Viharas, all those heart practices. So there's the wisdom component, which has to do with paying attention to recognize what's going on. What's going on around me? What's going on emotionally, mentally? What are my inclinations? Are there hindrances present? So the mindfulness practice creates, is the foundation for the wisdom component. And when we talk about wisdom in this tradition, it's a number of ways I could go about talking about that. Yeah, it's usually, what did the Buddha know on the morning after he became awakened? What was his perspective on the nature of the universe, of life? And it had to do, and what he, as he wrote it down, as he taught, understanding the Four Noble Truths. There is suffering. There's the end of suffering. He said he taught two things. One is suffering, that there is suffering. One is that there can be an end to suffering. And our practice is to understand that, to understand the nature of suffering, understand how suffering, how it comes together, the pieces that result in suffering, is grasping. The other aspects of the Four Noble Truths, the second Noble Truth is grasping, wanting things to be permanent when the nature of reality is impermanence. Things change. Things fall apart. We want things to be this way, and they're not. So there's suffering that arises when we are insisting on things being a certain way. And then there's also an aspect of the wisdom part is the degree to which we separate ourselves from everybody else in the universe. The way we say, me, and then everybody else. The way we lose sight and understanding of our total interdependence on each other, on the air, on food, on shelter, it's all, we're in this together. And I think Lauren said that this morning a number of times, just like you, just like me, just like you, I feel this. And that's kind of the nature. That's the wisdom component. And then, along with that wisdom component is this intention, this overall overriding intention of not causing harm. Knowing our interconnectedness, knowing suffering, understanding this deeply, there's an interest in not causing harm, sometimes there's an intention there, and that's again part of the wisdom, this wise intention of living for my welfare of others, leading to peace. Kind of simple way of saying that. Living by with the guidance of the five precepts, not causing harm. This is all the wisdom aspect. And then the heart practice is how it is manifest, how you act out of that guidance of wisdom in order to relate to one another, in order to not cause harm to oneself or another. Now, I'm going to start this morning. Well, I guess I already started. But emphasizing how important mindfulness is. So I got up this morning. I knew, you know, I was prepared to do a talk today. You know, and I know, you know, okay, we're going to be starting at 9 o'clock, and I'm going to show up at 8:15 in order to get situated here and all this other. And I said, oh, I should probably review my talk and so forth. And, you know, try to, you know, tweak it a little bit here and there so that, you know, I can offer this to you. You know, I wanted to offer a talk this morning. So getting, you know, I had that plan, you know, making some final notes, and I get a call from Suze at 8:45. Well, this was a half hour after I was planning on being here. So I, you know, I said, oh no. And so I realized I was a half hour late. I was mindful all morning long, mindful in everything I did, but I missed that little piece, that watching the clock, that extra half hour. So now, here I am. I made it here okay. I mindfully drove across town, mindful of traffic, mindful of the traffic lights, and tried to be safe in arriving here. Okay, so I mindfully arrived, and here's my talk. That's the whole talk right there. It's all written in pencil. The rest of the talk I had is kind of spewed down my stairwell as I walked out the door and left it all behind. So how does one respond? So you see, you're laughing, but my guess is that you have a certain sense of the importance of mindfulness. It's not some sort of spiritual thing. It just helps for navigating life. I'm going to be giving a talk this morning based on that. We'll see how it goes. Now, here I am. What am I going to say next? And so I'm seeing this going on. Okay, there's some worries going on. How am I going to come up with things to say that are worth listening to? You know, how is that going to happen? So seeing my reaction, what arises in myself is a mindfulness of body, mindfulness of mind. You know, I could give myself a good scolding. You know, that's one way to respond. Give myself a good scolding. That'll teach me, and next time I'll remember. But I've been practicing for a while, and I've given myself plenty of good scoldings. They don't work. You know, I don't know if you've realize that, but you know, they don't work. You might get their attention a little bit, but all the agitation that comes with that scolding, not helpful. Not helpful. So I'm gonna do what I can here. And I'm gonna do a little metta practice, a little karuna practice, and I'm gonna use phrases. So I wish myself well as I proceed in this talk. I wish you well in hearing the talk, and hopefully there'll be something here of value for you. So I wish that you'll have an experience of reasonably decent Dhamma. Okay, so importance of mindfulness. Two wings of the practice, wisdom and compassion. And again, compassion, I would include all the other Brahma-Viharas. And we have the Brahma-Viharas, and just as a parenthetical, I can throw in any type of parenthetical now that I'm not following notes. So be prepared for parentheticals. So a couple parentheticals is, I expand, beyond the four Brahma Viharas, and there's also other heart practices. My guess is that you all could come up with some. One is forgiveness. That thing of, all right, let go. I mean, you're in relationship, and things don't go the way you want it to. It's helpful to have that open-heartedness that you can let go. Another one is generosity. Just the spirit of we're in this together, and there's a sharing component. You share food, you share oneself, you share time. You give people the benefit of the doubt. That type of giving. So there's all kinds of ways we can look at this heart practice. So now I'll move on from there. And one thing in my notes is facing homelessness. Anybody here familiar with facing homelessness? Okay. Facing Homelessness is an organization that was right next door to us. They used to be there. They're an organization that helped and supported people who were homeless. And out next door to us was what they had was called a window of kindness. And so, people in the area, homeless people who needed things, maybe clothing or maybe a sleeping bag or something like that, they could come up to that window of kindness. And not only did they get stuff, but they get an interaction with a human being. You know what I mean? They get to talk to somebody. So that was an important component of facing homelessness. Yeah, they had a slogan, and the slogan's on my refrigerator. It says, "Just say hello." That much. Just say hello. Christina Feldman once said, one of the most difficult things. Christina Feldman, I throw out these names of teachers, and, they're familiar to me, but maybe not to you. But she's a longtime teacher from England. She used to show up here regularly giving, teachings. But she said, one of the most difficult things about being homeless is that you're ignored. There's no acknowledgement of you being a human being. So, and facing homelessness acknowledges the importance of this. So they just say hello. We can kind of group homeless people into, the homeless. The individual disappears in the all-encompassing concept of the homeless. So they have another, before I go on, I'm going to talk a little bit more about facing homelessness. So anyway, they ran out of money and they had to close up shop. So I was sorry that we weren't going to be neighbors. But the other component of what they did was providing housing. And they did what they had this called block project. And the block project was building tiny homes that would be put in somebody's backyard. And somebody who owned that backyard would have to have the open-heartedness to say, yeah, you can build one of those homes in my backyard, and yeah, that's fine if there's a homeless person that lives there. I'd be happy to do that. That exceeds my open-heartedness, to tell you the truth. I mean, that takes quite a bit. But I certainly can be inspired by that. I can be inspired by somebody that's willing to open their heart up and say, yes, welcome. So, continuing on and how I got to know facing homelessness, they had a big slideshow down at Benaroya Hall. And you know the stage at Benaroya Hall. So the screen at that stage was huge. And they showed pictures of people who weren't sheltered, people who were homeless. And they started out showing a picture. And it just covered the whole screen. And I just looked. And you could see the eyes, you could see the wrinkles in the face, you can see the expression. And it was, I'm moved, by just connecting with this person. Oh, this is a human being here. This is a human being. So they showed that picture. And they showed another one. I really wanted to take it in. Because I think, in terms of karuna, in terms of compassion, in terms of all of this, back to mindfulness. It begins with that awareness. It begins with that knowing. It begins with that seeing. It's beginning to that receptivity into our experience, opening our minds, opening our hearts. So they showed another picture. Oh, wow, that's an old man. Yeah, this and that. So I'm going to have thoughts about it. My heart kind of, moved by it. And then they, went from one person on the screen, they sent four on the screen. Now I'm kind of a little bit more hurried. I'm trying to look at all of them. Look at this one, look at that one, look at this one. Okay, it wasn't quite the same impact. Then they doubled it again, and now there's 16 pictures on the screen. And now I'm trying to look at all of them. I'm missing it. And that was the point. That's what happens. We separate, we compartmentalize, everything's in this bin. And then, we're not connected. So, their motto, just say hello. So that's been a practice for me. And then I guess that's, how does one learn compassion? I mean, wait, before I go too far down that line, just wait a little bit, say a little bit more. The other part was, I said they had this block project, and that was one way I participated. I never went to the window of kindness, but I ended up helping build some of the houses. That's something I can do. I wouldn't have been good at interacting at the window and what size you want and I found my entry point. I can swing a hammer. I know how to do that. And the effect of that is somebody's going to end up with a house. And so, act in that way. So being compassionate, being caring, being kind, it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be a dramatic thing. It doesn't have to be, this big welling up feeling about compassion. It just has to having that effect. Just doing something that you know can be helpful. So anyway, that got me, I ended up working a bit or volunteering a bit in a homeless camp down in southwest end of Seattle, and I started meeting people who are living in tents, and they're husband and wife. Oh, so nice that we're going to have a house. It's not a house. It's like 8 by 10. They call that a house. It's tiny. But it's shelter, it's dry. You can have warm things up in there, you can have dry blankets. And they valued that. And so it got, I felt fortunate to get close to the situation in that regard. I'm not doing it these days. Like I say, one thing, they closed it down. There's other reasons as well. So, facing homelessness, I think I'll let it go at that, because what I want to get, I've been using the word karuna, compassion. And I think it's worthwhile, while my high school chemistry teacher says it's worthwhile, to operationalize your variables. So what is this? What is compassion? What is this? I mean, everybody nods and smiles. What is compassion? I mean, and there's a certain truth to that. We have a certain understanding. But I'm going to turn to, I took this course a number of years ago called Compassion Cultivation Training. And it was offered at SIMS. It was offered by a woman, Diane Heatrick, who was a member of SIMS. And she got this training from Stanford University. They did this compassion cultivation training. And I think in the resources, if we can ever access those resources, I think I put that in there, this compassion cultivation training. And so Stanford looked at that. Well, what is this compassion? And they came up with a definition. They're approaching this scientifically, social science. And what is compassion? And there is a number of components to it. Compassion requires a number of things. It has to do with suffering. It has to do with, first of all, noticing it. So there's a cognitive piece. You actually see, again, just say hello. You notice it. Look in that direction. Watch the evening news. Look in that direction. That's the first part. The next part is a response. It's this empathy. You respond to it. Oh, suffering. And just like me. So you don't understand it deeply, but there's at least some sort of resonance, something that you're picking up on. So with that, if I was in that situation, it would hurt. I'd really want to get out of it, whether it's homelessness or whether it's, physical injury or what have you. The next step is wanting to do something about it. So this is where compassion is. It's compassion with, it's feeling with, it's connecting. It's wanting to do something about it. And then, according to the Stanford definition, it's taking it one more step. You actually try to do something about it. So there's all those pieces. Cognitive, noticing, responding, wanting to change, and actually acting to change. I found that really helpful. So Stanford took it farther than that and said compassion cultivation training. So first of all, they're defining their terms. And so what's training? What's the training piece? Well, all of us have a certain degree of compassion. Every one of us, gets affected. Oh, a little kitty. Oh, a little baby. There's ways that there's things in our own. I don't know if babies and kittens are your thing. It might be something else. But there's a way that, we respond. So we have that. We don't want, somebody to feel pain. We'd like to alleviate the pain and suffering if we can. We do it with our family members. We do it amongst our friends. We freely offer advice unsolicited to lots of people in order to help alleviate pain, but that's something else again. So we all have that. We all have a certain degree of that. And the other thing that Stanford is saying, that we all have limits to the degree that we can respond. And these limits, I'll go into that in a little bit, And the next part is we have these limits, and in spite of these limits, we all have an ability to change and learn. So those limits, I'm going to go back to homelessness. I live in Ballard, and at one point there was all kinds of tents put up in this really nice park in the middle of Ballard, and it annoyed a lot of people. And it used to be, like a little water park for little kids to play in, and a little skate park where other people could play in, and then lots of little chairs to sit around in. And it all got kind of taken over by tent and encampments, and it bothered a lot of people, and because it was scary for some. It was annoying for me. I'd much rather see little kids playing there than homeless camps. I mean, I have my own reactivity. But fear wasn't one of them. But it was for some. It was a danger. I mean, I think of one particular woman friend of mine, small woman, and for her to go across that area, some people were confront her, and it'd be scary. So there's reasons that we hold back. And there's a wisdom there. There's a wisdom that's involved in for my welfare, is the first part of that, for my welfare, taking care of oneself, keeping oneself safe. Start there. This is kind of down to the amoeba level in terms of living things. There is a hard wiring of our ways that we stay safe. A deer goes into the meadow. Is this safe? Oh, okay, what's that sound? It's not safe, and it runs. So we do the same type of thing. We want to keep safe. So the training, in terms of compassion cultivation training, the training comes with awareness, with mindfulness, with our becoming aware of how we hold back. And you can just think for a second. I mean, I give you a list of names, all right? Just kind of check your response. A doctor, a homeless person, a baby, a lawyer, the brother that you don't like, a politician that you like, politician that you don't like. It doesn't take much. I think you get a sense of there's ways that we push away and the ways that we open up. So the compassion cultivation training has to do with being aware of those fears, of the aversion, of our pulling back, and the ways that we can open up. And what it allows us to do is say, oh, maybe I can open up this far. Maybe you're going through the checkout line at Trader Joe's or something, and you just want to be done. So you don't have time to talk to anybody because you're on your way. You can recognize that wanting mind of trying to be over and done with. And you can also recognize, oh, I see what I'm doing here. I'm going to just pause here and just say hello. Say hello to the checkout person. And my guess is most of us had that experience where all of a sudden you exchange a sentence or two and there's a smile on both your faces. Okay, have a nice day. And it kind of sends you on your way and sends them on your way. It's creating a ripple. You're creating a ripple. And I think that's what this Brahmaviharas practice is. The karuna, the compassion. It's sending ripples. It's like interacting with another person. They feel it. They feel cared for. it ripples. You know, who knows how, you know, but it does. There's some sort of ripple. I mean, in terms of for my welfare, welfare of others, and leading to peace, that overall intention, the ripples of acting out of not causing harm happen. And certainly ripples happen when harm is caused. You know, somebody cut me off in the, you know, on the street. Next thing I mean, I'm yelling at him, and I'm, you know, yelling at the person next to me. You send a ripple, you know. And so we have choices, and mindfulness can help us decide, what do I do under these circumstances? Move towards, move away, offer to support, you know. Can I help you? I forgot how long I need to go here. I'm supposed to go. Oh, I got a bit to go here. Another little story. I make donations. You know, I should have introduced where I'm coming from. I've had a good life. You know, I'm a white male, had all the privileges that come with that. I've had decent jobs, and currently I'm very secure in terms of food, shelter, clothing, and health care. So that's the beginning point. And now, what was I going to just follow that with? I know. I make, yeah, that's one thing I can do. I can make donations. I'm not always able to act. You know, some people have a kind of a privilege of working in healthcare or what have you, or teaching and social services. And they're, you know, have those opportunities daily in terms of acting, interacting, and offering kindness and compassion. Those aren't, okay. I make donations. I can do that. And I end up, as a result, I end up getting around Christmas time all these letters asking for another donation, and usually accompanied with Christmas cards. And so I have all these Christmas cards that collect, you know, going through November. I said, what am I going to do with all these Christmas cards? Christmas isn't a big deal for me. You know, I hang up my little ornaments and, you know, do that and what have you, but it's not a big deal for me. Well, I think kind of inspired by facing homelessness, I said, I got an idea. I'm going to give these cards randomly to people who are living on the streets. I said, you know, okay, let's see how that goes. And I decided to put some money in. And then somebody suggested, say, it would be better if I put, you know, like a cash card. So that, you know, because there are people who are certainly, if they had cash, could be spent on things which aren't helpful, drugs, alcohol, what have you. But having a card, it's going to kind of assure it's going to, food is bought or something like that. So I did that. And I had this little card. And I started, what should I do? How do I make out this card? And I didn't want to put my, I was afraid to put my name down. Yeah, I wanted to go a little bit close, but I didn't want them to all of a sudden be my good buddy. So I was a little cautious about that. But I did decide to write something in there. I said, dear neighbor, you know, best wishes for the holidays. And yeah, I had something in there, and I had a card in there. And then I had proceeded to give them out as I walked down the street, walking through Ballard in that area. And just a couple of things. I gave one to this guy. He looked like pretty decent shape. I mean, he didn't look that particularly needy. He was a younger guy, looked strong and healthy, but I gave him a card anyway. And that was at Green Lake. And he came back around when he saw me, you know, after I did my circuit. He said, "Boy, you have no idea how helpful that is." So, you know, and I don't have a clue. But it was good to get that feedback. It was good to know that, oh, there was something there that was worthwhile. I gave a card. I was just walking in Ballard, and there's a woman in front of me, and I don't even think she was like homeless. I think she was on the way home, but she was elderly and kind of was carrying groceries, and I thought, I'm going to give her a card. And she opened the card up. And she, well, no, she didn't open the card up. She just took the card as a greeting card. I said, you know, Happy New Year. And she said, thank you. She didn't even know what was in the card yet. She said, thank you. This is so helpful. My cat just died. I fell down last week and I broke my wrist. And to have this random gift meant a lot to her. And that made an impression on me. So it's encouraging. Yeah, that's the trick. You know, in terms of, you know, I think we all have this interest in being compassionate. I don't know if you're anything like me. We have a hard time knowing how. You know, what do you do about Gaza? What do you do about Ukraine? What do you do about just most of the shit? It's gonna work. I won't use that word, though. That you see on the evening news. You know, how do you respond to that? Yeah, I guess at least respond, you know. Yeah, try not to yell at my brothers for their political choices. Okay, here's another story. I'd say I've got 6 siblings, 5 siblings. Parents are gone. And they're kind of split down the middle in terms of the politics. And I went back, mostly back in the Midwest, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and we were going to have a reunion. That was the last election in 2016. And I was going to meet up with my older brother. Love my older brother. Good man. His wife lived a good 20 years in a wheelchair because of, what is that? Muscular dystrophy. And so he was taking care of her, dressing her, showering her, toilet. Yeah, had to be around all the time, full service. He's a couple of years older than me. And he also posted, you know, I'm not sure where your politics are, but he had a giant sign of Donald Trump in his front yard that his neighbors loved. And I was going to go visit. I do not have a sign like that. So I was going to visit him. And we're going to take a road trip on the way to a wedding, a family wedding, going from Minneapolis down to all the way across Wisconsin, stopping off at relatives along the way and ending up at a wedding in Milwaukee. So I'm thinking I'm going to fly. I love my brother Dick. How am I going to spend all that time in a car with him? This is going to be a challenge. And he told me, he said, you know, this is what his beliefs were. And, you know, neighbors loved his huge sign. And I guess I made a decision to make use of the old advice that I learned when I was 10 years old, don't talk about politics and religion. You know, okay, just don't go there. So we did. So, you know, okay, it's a long trip. a couple of days, stopping along the way. And our common ground was service. That's what we had in common. Yeah, it's how do we relate to one another? Basically, caring for one another, regardless of politics. You know, there's a need. Heart goes out. You know, no need to check their ID, their who they voted for. You know, never mind. Just not important. You know, Carl Sagan, he did the Voyager, responsible for the Voyager mission, astronomer. And as the Voyager mission was leaving the solar system, he had to take a picture. I mean, you probably heard about this. Take a picture of the solar system way out there. It was way on outer planets. And in this field, he said, take a picture of the Earth. And the picture turned out it was this field of dots, whole field of dots, mostly stars. In the middle of those was some sort of this little blue dot, pale blue dot. That's how it's, if you want to Google it, pale blue dot. And that was the Earth. And he said, I get moved by this. This is our home. The whole history of humanity happened on that speck of dust in the middle of this cosmos. All the kings, all the paupers, all the wars, all the loving deeds, it all happened on that dot. We're so closely connected. We're in it together for a very short period of time. Yeah. There's no time for anything of worth other than kindness, care, yeah, mindfulness. Let me see what we got here. I'm going to just finish. Boy, I could have added this too. I'm going to quickly do this. Part of the compassion cultivation training was write a self-compassion letter. Write a letter of compassion to oneself. And I got mine right here. I'm not going to have time to read it. But it was written like 8 years ago. But there's three parts to this letter. And it has the compassion. So have compassion to some difficulty in your life. You know? So it starts. It says, first part is you write this letter as a second person. So write it as if this is a good friend of yours writing to you with compassion and caring for you. So it says, recognize, acknowledge your sense of inadequacy as well as the values and intentions. So recognize, oh, this is what's going on with you. And oh, you value this. Second part is, understanding you are not alone. Yeah, you know, recognizing, yeah, you're suffering, but you are not alone. And then the third part is just offering kindness to yourself and encouragement to yourself. Well, I wrote this letter, the topic of it, the compassion I was expressing to myself was the it was about 8 years ago, the degree to which I stress over writing a talk, and giving a talk. And I said, you know, I just, you all know, and I said, why am I doing this? It's just so stressful. I worry about a day, and da, 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 da. And so I wrote a compassion letter. Yeah, okay, acknowledging it, acknowledging that stress, and then having compassion for it. Yeah, but you know, this is good stuff. It's worthwhile doing. Yeah, go for it. Yes, go ahead. Go for it. So that's kind of the letter. I'm going to let it go at that because I think I'm heading over time.